Welcome back to The Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I'm your host, Dayton Rumbold, and you're listening to episode 114, Jim of all trades. Jim Schroeder has done it all. He's been in the U.S. Army, helped with open heart surgery, owned his own business, and even been in a Christian rock band. To learn more about Jim and his story, please tune in to this featured exchange. Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange. We got Jim in the studio today. Our first real musician, besides Daniel, that Daniel serves as our resident musician here. So thanks for coming out.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. I'm always amazed by the people that come into the trucking industry. Mm-hmm. We've had an orientation here recently. A sheriff deputy worked 20 years maybe doing that. And we had someone that worked a full career at State Farm, came into here, wanted to switch things up, go into trucking. We have people that do it as funding their hobby. They have something they're doing, going back to school. So I think your story is no exception to that, and I'm really interested and excited to talk about your story. So,
okay,
yeah, thanks for making this work.
Yeah,
so
a pleasure.
Yeah, so heard you've been writing a song about GE. Is that true?
I have.
You and Colin?
Yeah, in pieces. Just kind of, we were messing around one day, talking and joking, and then I just started sitting around playing with lyrics, and he said he wanted it to be something that would get in people's head and get stuck there, so they'd be singing it all day. So I went through some different songs, and I think the song Jolene that was originally sung by Dolly Parton but been sung by every other person since, I think we're going to kind of work it out to that tune. So
yeah, so can you give us a little sample? And maybe Daniel can chime in here too.
G-E-G-E-G-E-G-E. Yeah. So
I'm
basically
it.
It'll be like that. I don't have any of my lyrics with me. I have some different ones and going to go through them with Colin.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a jokester, so I have to make sure I don't cross any lines that'll hurt people's feelings as I joke about
them. Yeah, it's a good thing though. Keep things lighthearted. Yeah, so you're a whiz on the guitar.
No, that is absolutely not true.
Big shredder.
Absolutely not true.
But
I've been playing guitar. When I played in the band, the guys I played with have been playing for 30 and 40 years.
Right.
You know, so they really carried me.
Wow.
You know,
and that's cool.
They allowed me to be, you know, a novice at best at playing the guitar and actually get in and do some fun things.
So. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And so it was the band you were in, Ragamuffin Sons?
Correct.
Okay, cool. How long were you a part of that for?
For about 2 years. They're still going. Mm-hmm. They've got some new members. They replaced me after I left.
Mm-hmm. Show had to keep going.
Yeah, this business makes it real tough to kind of practice new music because they write just about all their own music.
Wow.
And you know, I just didn't have the opportunity to keep up with them and go to the shows and go to the practices and so forth. So
that's cool. So you just got certified red.
I did.
Here at Nussbaum too, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
You've been here for
a little bit under 2 years. It'll be 2 years in August.
Coming up on 2 years, so that's cool. Yeah. I was 2 years for me from January, so now it's January 22, so a little bit over 2 years, so.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, it's cool. And that band, you guys had a crew of 4 or 5 people.
We had David, who's the lead singer, Brian, lead guitar, Ron on the drums, Sam on bass, and me on rhythm guitar. So 5 of us, for the most part. I think they have 6 or 7 now.
Yeah, and we didn't say, but Christian rock band, right?
Christian rock band,
Equivalent played at the Coachella. Or what was it?
Ichthus?
Ichthus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the biggest gigs, you would say?
That was probably the biggest event we played at. We had a couple other shows that we played with a band named Hush Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're still together or not, but mm-hmm. The guy that played drums for Hush Harbor, he was also a promoter in Louisville. Mm-hmm. So we played some of the events in Louisville and played in some different places in Indiana. So.
Okay, really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Music industry is really tough. I mean, it's a tough thing.
It is. It's, you know, there's a lot of drama in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the unexpected part of it that, you know, I really wasn't interested in the
right.
drama part.
You just want to play.
I just wanted to play and worship Christ and, you know, sing with some people, you know.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. Christian rock band. So, yeah, check it out. Ragamuffin Sons.
Yep. They're on Spotify, all the platforms.
Yeah. Apple. Cool. Well, to start, I have this pod deck here, and it has a random question. So if you want to take one of them and answer this question, just to do a little icebreaker. Whatever you. There you go.
You can keep pushing that one out of my way for some reason.
It's like Old Maid.
Have you ever had a this can't be happening moment? What was it? Oh, wow. That's,
a tough one.
As I'd said, or I'd told you before, I'm on my second marriage right now, and probably the moment I was proposing to my second wife, it was, hey, I can't believe I'm doing this moment.
Wow.
And after my first wife, you know, I'd sworn to myself I'd never get married again.
Mm.
And, you know, of course, God had some different plans for us.
Yeah. And I've talked to some other people that have gone through similar experiences, and when that happens, you're so heartbroken. I mean,
absolutely,
rightly so. I mean, there's so much heartbreak and probably some bitterness towards love.
Yeah,
how'd you overcome that?
Time. Mm-hmm. It's probably when I really started trying to reconnect with Christ during that time. So
cool. Yeah. It's great. I love hearing that, and you definitely represent Christ, and a big part of your story too. It seems like you were on a journey of finding Him, and excited to talk about that a little bit more. So if we could get into your story a little bit,
sure.
Talk about, so you grew up in
Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay, cool.
Right. Graduated high school, immediately went into the military. Mm-hmm. If you ask me years coming from here and really placing things in exact order of the events that they happened.
Yeah.
You know, probably won't get that right.
And we don't need a comprehensive. We're just the storybook.
Right, 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 right.
You don't need exact years, but.
So I went in the military, was a field medic and then an operating room technician in the military. I actually got out of the military for several years. Traveled through nursing agencies for a while as an operating room technician.
Mm-hmm.
Went back in the military, spent more time in the military, and then I got out of the military and went back into the operating rooms for several years. At some point, I just really struggled. I was really struggling in life, and you know, I think for a while I kind of blamed my job. Mm-hmm. Was a lot of it. And so I ended up leaving there and somehow or another ended up managing restaurants.
Okay.
During that time, I went through a divorce that we had talked about. And a couple of years later, I met my wife that I'm married to now. And she had just started the landscaping and the housekeeping business.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually her idea. She's done a lot of gardening and so forth since she was a kid,
mm-hmm.
and she'd always loved it. And so she had decided she was going to venture out and mm-hmm. try to start a business. So I continued in the restaurant business for a few years, and eventually she talked me into quitting.
Mm-hmm.
Said I didn't have to work with her. She was doing well enough to where, you know, we could both survive, and so I actually ended up quitting and then going into business with her. And I started a lawn care side of the business and did that for about 10 years altogether.
Wow.
So.
Okay. So this helps me pull some of the pieces together. We talked about on the phone about your military experience,
mm-hmm.
being a surgical technician in the operating room, which is pretty crazy too. You said you worked on open heart surgeries, assisted there.
The very first job I had civilian-wise doing that was at University of Louisville Hospital in Kentucky, which was a trauma facility. So very quickly, I kind of got into doing a lot of level one trauma cases and so forth. And I had a big interest in doing open heart. Really, at the time, it was about the money and the prestige behind doing it. And so I started traveling. I went to Lexington, Kentucky, and learned how to do open heart there. And then from there, I went to the Medical College of Virginia and learned how to do transplant, did the liver, kidney, and heart transplant there with the doctors. I didn't, let me be real clear, I didn't, I just assisted
with the surgery. But to know that there's a level of degree where you put me in the operating room, I can't help you out. No, so you have to have a lot of knowledge there to be able to assist.
There was. You know, a lot of it's just, you know, so many things are very routine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really repetitive doing, you know, a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
Open heart surgery was just, you know, step one through 150, and you just had to memorize, you know, whichever doctor you were working with, how he did things and what order he did things and so forth. And generally they would pair you with the same physician all the time so that, you know, they had confidence in you and you had confidence in knowing, you know, exactly how they did things.
Did you have a good relationship with the surgeons you were with?
Usually, yeah. It was really a great atmosphere, you know. You know, of course, you open heart surgeons are they're really intelligent guys, you know.
Right.
And there's always a joke, the difference, do you know what the difference between an open-heart surgeon and God is?
Oh.
God doesn't think he's an open-heart surgeon. So.
Yeah.
So, definitely. You know, there was a little level of arrogance with them. Sure. And they were demanding, but they, you know, they were, you know, in charge of somebody's life. And
absolutely. I mean, that's something.
And so they had to be very demanding.
Their heart is literally in their hands.
Right.
They can, yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. And so you were in the military and you just decided to, I'm going to help out. I want to be in the surgery. I want to help out with surgeries, be in the operating room.
Right. Well, that's what I did in the military too.
Mm-hmm.
But you had, you only have certain facilities within the military that do level one trauma cases, or they do open heart cases and so forth. I, at the time, really wanted to do those things, but I didn't want to go. I was stationed in Korea. I did not want to go to Fort Lewis, Washington, or Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I wanted to come back to the Louisville area.
Yeah.
And that was part of the purpose, and one of the benefits of going to Korea was you could name your next duty station. And so I ended up just leaving the military from Korea and came back to the States, and actually worked at a hospital in Louisville for a little while first.
So you left completely, or how,
I left completely.
That work? Okay.
This is the second time I left completely.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
The first time I served 4 years, got out, and then decided to go back in.
Okay. So. Okay. 4 years, got out, came back in, and the second time you left to be a surgical technician.
Yeah, just to really just to become non-military
anymore. Non-military.
Yeah, I was I was militaried out at that point.
Sure, and that was one of the questions I had, was how does civilian life compare to being in the military? Like, how
I mean,
is that?
It's a totally different life and lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know, the military is, they're pretty much in control of you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know. And
they say, get up, you get up.
Rules of engagement are different. Even, you know, when you become a non-commissioned officer, you know, there's always somebody above you and there's always somebody expecting something from you.
Sure, right.
Know? And, yeah, so it's a different world. You have to ask permission to go to the doctor. You have to ask permission to, you know, do just about anything you do in the military.
Yeah, and you kind of wanted more freedom to your personal life.
Yeah, and the truth of the matter was, I wasn't a real good soldier, you know.
Really?
Yeah, every duty station I went to, I saw it kind of as a a new vacation to party at.
Sure.
You know,
so. 14 years though. I mean, you had to have something like that. Roughly, that's how long you were there.
A little bit over 13.
13. Yeah. But so there had to be some type of good match until you burnt out, or.
To be honest with you, I was really good at my job, and I ended up towards the end. I did what's called a forward surgical team.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught people how to put mobile hospitals together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of enjoyed that. But they enjoyed me doing that because it got me away from base and it put us out in the field all the time where you have less chance to show up late to work.
So you're,
or,
you're kind of a troublemaker. Or am I not picking that
maybe,
up wrong?
No, maybe. Maybe. I guess it depends on who you are.
Who you and, ask.
Yeah.
You like to have a good time.
I liked having a good time just a little bit too much.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that you're – yeah, I don't want to make that the same
when
thing
as
a troublemaker.
When it was time to work, I worked, and I was really good at my job.
Yeah.
But it was when it was time not to work, I sure didn't like anybody on my heels telling me what to do.
Cool.
And that just doesn't make for a good soldier.
Sure. And I'm just trying to get a full picture of who Jim Schroeder is.
Right, right.
That's why I'm throwing out these statements because – yeah, so still trying to understand.
Yeah, drinking and partying was the whole objective,
mm-hmm.
you know. Even when I was at work, it was like the whole objective for the day is to finish work so I could go hang out with the guys and,
sure.
and do what we wanted
yeah.
to do.
Yeah, you were really good at what you did, and you really liked to have a good time.
Right.
Yeah, okay, if I'm understanding that, okay. Cool. So you were putting together these mobile hospitals, teaching other people how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, and you were really good in – they liked you doing that.
Right.
Okay. And then how else did you move around in the military when you were there?
What do you mean move around?
Did you finish up? That's the last thing you did
that
before
was the
you
last,
left military?
That was the last job assignment that I had.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All
still right. under the same, what you would call the MOS, which is 91 Delta or operating room
uh-huh.
technician. That was just where I was assigned.
Okay. And I might have missed this earlier. What branch?
Army.
It was in the Army. Okay.
Right.
Great. Cool. Question about military and your service. How has it helped you today? Is there anything that you look back on that you pull information out from that?
You know, there are some things that were instilled in me, you know, really through making mistakes. For a long time, I had a really hard time of showing up on time in the military. So for about 6 months straight, I had a first sergeant that made me show up 30 minutes early to every single function that I did.
Wow.
And so
only you?
Just me.
Yeah, just you.
Just me. Yeah. And, you know, I realized something in that of how much stress that takes out of your day
mm-hmm.
to get up and do things early.
Yeah.
And so that's still part of my makeup and my character now is I would much rather be 2 hours early than 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I can see a lot of how that military experience could help you with trucking, too. Because you said military, it's a whole different lifestyle. Trucking,
right.
It's a whole different lifestyle. Like, versus if you're not, it's not just a job, but it does take up a lot of your life.
It does, yeah. The big difference between the two is in trucking, you're completely in control of your atmosphere 24 hours a day until you're at home.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
You know? You know, you listen to what you want to listen to. You go to sleep pretty much when you want to go to sleep. You wake up when you want to wake up.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have somebody else telling you when you have to do those things.
Yeah. You definitely, when you have to make it somewhere, you have, but you can
right,
decide.
Right. You have responsibilities.
On how you get there.
Right.
Yeah. What was your favorite base, military base?
Probably Fort Sam Houston.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good portion of that time I was single.
Okay.
And as I said, I lived a secular life.
Sure.
And that's where all the medical people are trained. So that's where a whole lot of the females in the military mm-hmm. are stationed.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Sam Houston.
Yeah. Before Sam Houston, mental note, right? Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about military becoming surgical technician. So you started off as a nurse.
No, I started as a in the military, you have what's called your MOS, which is kind of your job description.
Gotcha.
So we had to go through what was called 91 Alpha School, which is learning how to be a field medic.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we went through the 91 Delta School, which is actually operating room technician school.
Okay.
So you go through school, and then you go through on-the-job training in an operating room, and you kind of go from there.
Wow.
To be honest with you, 90% of you know, any skill that I might have gained in that job, I learned in the hospitals, in level one trauma hospitals, in the civilian world.
Okay. And I thought it was interesting how you gravitated towards that level one trauma.
It's level one trauma just means the hospital can handle anything that comes through the doors.
Okay, so
level
it's
two
anything.
Trauma,
yeah.
That might be up to a certain point. I don't even know what the what the thresholds for each one of them are. And then you have level three trauma facilities, which would be more like your outpatient hospitals and
gotcha.
So forth.
Okay. You handle anything that comes in through that door.
Right.
Yeah.
And you always have an operating room that's ready and capable and has the supplies in it that can take care of just about anything that happens.
Okay. So. Wow. Any notable stories, stuff that you look back on and like, I can't believe that happened?
You know, it was funny in that job, you know, you get to a point where you think you've seen just about everything happen, and then something else would happen. I remember, you know, we'd see many gunshot wounds and so forth, but I think the strangest thing I ever saw was some elephants got away from a circus in downtown Louisville at one point. And we had somebody who ended up passing away. They got stepped on. Their belly got stepped on by the elephant as it was running. And, yeah, that was probably the strangest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, you started saying that, and I was like, is this like a made-up story? Like elephants got out of the circus, but no this is –
they really got away. And,
legit.
They had to find the elephants, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, man. And
I'm sure they weren't too hard to find, but they had to track them down. And
you have to get them.
They had to get them, yeah.
They don't really make a lot of pet control companies that take care of elephants.
Yeah, animal control.
Animal control.
Probably didn't know what to do with that.
Right. Yeah. How do you stop an elephant?
Right.
I don't know. I haven't done it. I think the medical field in general, too, would be there is a level of burnout that happens there.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a level of there's some things that don't happen in the operating room. You know, if we have a patient that passes, you know, after they pass, you would have to kind of clean the body up. You got to leave all the, you know, anything that's in them. But after the doctor closes them up, you got to get them as cleaned up as possible. And you have to let the family see the people before they go to the morgue. Those are, you know, kind of the emotionally tough times.
So. Right. And that's when I was thinking about how it would be difficult is the emotional aspect of it too, of working with people, having people pass away, being around that quite often and seeing some things that you may not want to see.
Right. Yeah. Children, it's tough. You know, that's one of those things that you know, you don't want anybody to have to experience.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. And I also do want to thank you for that. Like your service, medical field, and military. I know you said that sometimes it wasn't the best, but at the end of the day, like you were helping other people, and that's an incredible thing to offer.
Yeah, it was my pleasure to do those shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Then you did some transplants too as part of that?
Medical College of Virginia. For the most part, we had a vascular team there, and most of them were livers. I think the toughest thing about doing those cases is they took forever. So we saw a lot of those. Saw some interesting things with them starting to split livers, and you know, they could take one liver and put it in two different patients.
Yeah.
Kidneys were really simple and really fast. I guess the neatest liver I ever saw was a 65-pound polycystic liver that we took out of somebody and transplanted a new one. So the liver itself actually
was
65
pounds.
Yes.
And that fit in someone's body?
And it was in somebody's belly, yeah.
Holy moly. So it just grew like crazy. It just kept growing?
It had what's called polycystic disease. So the membrane on the outside of the liver actually starts gaining fluid bubbles.
Okay.
So a lot of that weight would be fluid, but it still enlarges the liver itself.
Okay. Wow, you're giving me a ton of medical 101 here. I took anatomy, but this is stuff that I forgot or never learned. So
it's the toughest class in the world, too, anatomy and physiology.
Fascinating, though.
Yeah,
it was. Helps you for life, too. I'm sure there's times later in life when you whip out something and help someone else out. So comes back around.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've thought about that stuff.
So. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't really use it too much day to day anymore.
No, hopefully not. Yeah.
Okay.
Not in trucking anyway.
Right. Hopefully not in trucking. Yeah. So, yeah, really, really interesting stuff with that. So going from there, you said I've had enough of the medical field, and then right around that time, you went through the divorce.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that all around the same time?
It was pretty much around the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I was just, I was going through a really rough part of my life. I was drinking a lot at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, wasn't a good employee, wasn't a good father, wasn't a good husband.
Mm.
And just kind of tried to get out and figure out where my groove in life was.
Right. So. Yeah. How many kids did you have?
I have two.
Two kids. Okay.
Yeah, I have a 28-year-old son who drives the semi as well.
No way.
Yeah.
Where at?
At a Louisville.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah. And I have a 19-year-old daughter who works in a vet clinic, and she either wants to drive a truck or she wants to be a veterinarian. So she's not sure where she's going to go with it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, big decision either way.
Yeah.
Veterinarian, a lot of school.
Yeah. She's got to get rid of TikTok, I think, before she can actually accomplish anything. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Both big things. And I think that's interesting. She's considering driving a truck also.
She comes with me every once in a while.
She was
kind of with me pretty regularly for a while.
Yeah.
And then she started dating a boy. So now I'm second place. So.
Right. Yeah. Tough to go through that, but runs in the family, apparently, the truck driving, that they all kind of got the bug.
You know, my son actually did it before any of us did.
Really?
Yep, and he's the one that talked me into actually looking at a truck driving career.
No way.
Yeah.
And Daniel said this before. He said, you're a man that's lived a lot of different lives. That's what it seems like. We talk about all these different things you've done, and that you've taken on trucking later in life. Like, this is not something you've been doing your whole life, but this is something that picked up later. So very interesting. Yeah. So he got you inspired to do trucking. So I don't want to dive too deep into the not so great moments, unless you want to talk about
care.
It.
It's, I'm really pretty open about it.
Okay.
You know?
Good.
But, so if you have any questions.
Okay. Yeah. So through that time, the divorce happened. How did you meet your second wife?
As I told you, I started managing restaurants. Actually, I started as a bartender. Great place for somebody who drinks a lot, right?
Yeah. Right.
And actually, a couple years later, I was working for a pretty big franchise that most people would know who they are. And somehow or another ended up in management for that restaurant. They sent me to their manager school. So I started managing the restaurant, switched companies that I was working for, became the general manager of a restaurant in Louisville. But anyway, the joke with my wife is she started stalking me at my restaurant.
Okay.
So she'd I didn't know her. She brought her mom in there before I'd ever even met her, and she told her mom, I'm going to marry him. So if that –
bold claim.
Very bold claim. That's my wife.
Wow.
And so she introduced herself to me. I told her I wasn't interested in dating anybody.
Sure.
She talked me into just going and having lunch with her. And then she started bringing me coffee every day. Then she started bringing me food every day. And
she's pretty resourceful. She had like a whole game plan.
She had a game plan. She does. Yes, she's got a game plan for everything.
12-step program. Yeah, I win guess. Gym over.
Yeah, it's funny. She's been in a 12-step program for 20 years now. So,
okay. Wow. Yeah. That's cool. 20 yeah. years. Wow. 20 years. That's yeah. amazing. You don't look a day over 20.
She has.
She's been.
She sorry. Has. Yeah, she's been in a 12-step program for. You had said it's like she had a 12-step program on me.
Oh.
She's been in a 12-step program for 20 years.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. So that's through that time you kind of softened your heart towards the idea.
I did. I had by that time I'd just kind of quit drinking and was trying to, really just get my life together. And I was working so much there wasn't time for anything else. I don't know if you know much about restaurant management, but you work about as much as you do driving a truck. You know, you're working 60 or 80 hours a week.
On
you're on salary.
The whole time.
You're going home to go to sleep, wake back up, and go straight back into work.
Yeah.
And so. So that's what I did.
I think we're hitting every industry today.
Yeah, you know, so
we
far.
Said the food industry.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what
military,
else.
Military, we talked about music industry. You really seen it all. Or like the different aspects of them, how they're different. What was your relationship with God like at that time, being in the restaurant?
In the background.
In the background.
Yeah, okay. Totally in the background. When I was 21... I had, I'd kind of gone through a rough spot in life, and God tried to disciple me, and, I'd actually begun a relationship with Christ, with Him, got baptized in, at a Southern Baptist church in Lexington, Kentucky, and then kind of walked away from it all after that.
Yeah,
for a while.
Just more forgetting about it, or was it something where you were
ignoring
turning
away? It. I would say it was more ignoring it.
Yeah.
We had talked before. I don't know at what point, I can say I believed from that moment. But I know at some point or another, it happened, and I know there was always that voice in my head that said, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think maybe that was the Holy Spirit just trying to guide me in the right direction. I don't know,
Yeah. I mean, there's a moment when it switches from duty to delight.
Right.
And like the gospel isn't duty. It's not like go to church and then you get to heaven, but it's delight. Like God died for me. Jesus sent Jesus to die for me. And delight, because he did that, I want to get to know him more. Like, who is this God that would do that for me? So it sounds like it switched for you. At some point, it was maybe you thought of it as duty, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that, or don't want to be affiliated with that. And now you're like, it seems like it's a delight for you.
I think a lot of it, too, during that time is, you still carry so much guilt and shame, for the things you've done and for turning your back on God. In the very beginning, it's hard to, walk back to him and calling him for forgiveness and then accept that forgiveness.
Right. That's a hard part. Like, would you really want me? Like, if someone really knows all your mistakes, would that person still want you?
Right. And it's really hard to believe
that,
a sovereign God would want to have anything to do with somebody who does the stuff that we do.
Right. It's a mystery. Yeah, it is. Really, it is. Like, just him saying, like, I know everything you've done. I know that you turned your back on me. I still love you. And it's incredible. Like when you really think about it, it's the most incredible thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So some of that was in the background at that time, being in the restaurant business. And then your wife motivated you to stop that?
She knew I was miserable. I was worn out, and we didn't have much time to spend together, and I was sleeping, like I said, four to 6 hours a night, and she finally talked me into quitting. So at first, I'd left being the GM of a restaurant, and I left actually right when I was leaving my regional manager for the chain that I was working for. She left the business too, and she took me to another restaurant where I just became like a a key holder for the restaurant. So I would run a shift here and run a shift there.
Gotcha.
And it was more of an hourly-based pay. And that job actually helped me realize that I didn't want anything. You know, I didn't want to die in a restaurant. You know, this is not how I want to finish my career.
Sure.
My career, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely seems like not something you're interested in for the long term. It was a good solution for the midterm, but long term.
And her business started doing really well during that time.
Yeah.
And so we just decided that, you know, it's time to go.
Yeah. So. Yeah. She has a lot of gumption to start that. I mean, I think to start her own business, that's a big undertaking.
It was. It was, you know, it became a whole lot more than what we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it started getting bigger and bigger for a while. And then, of course, COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And when COVID hit, the business kept coming. It was like everybody else was at home. And they were looking at their yards, trying to think of what they could do and what they could spend their money on. But the employees weren't coming. You know, there was a lot of money going to people, and they just didn't need a job. And so we had a handful of people, and she and I were getting out there, and, you know, we were trying to manage the business and trying to do all the bids, do all the paperwork, do payroll, do everything.
Wow.
And we were working the job. So we right back again, you know, we were working
crazy.
Yeah, 12, 16 hours a day. And it's my wife and I have an awesome relationship, so I don't want this to be taken the wrong way.
Right.
But when you work with your wife and you're around each other making decisions that sometimes you don't agree on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it can take a toll on you.
Right. So. And I think part of your story is talking about how you work to find something that is better, like a job that you really enjoy and stuff like that. Part of your journey is you went from different places. So we've talked about different things, and military is great. You know, working in the medical field, that's great. So I definitely want to say those are good too. And part of the working in the restaurant management just wasn't a good fit. And so,
no.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I did pretty well at it, and just, yeah.
Well, and I want to say that too. Of like, you were really good at it too.
It just never felt right to me.
Yeah.
And just it was never my place.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. You mentioned on the phone how this was something where you wanted to combine it with ministry, combine the business.
Oh,
with
the landscaping.
Ministry. Yeah.
Yeah, we teamed up with a men's homeless recovery shelter out of Louisville, downtown Louisville. And they would they had certain things that their residents had to go through before they were able to work. And they, of course, they could work and find a job anywhere they wanted to. But they sent us a lot of the guys because we didn't do background checks on them.
Okay.
We had, but then we also, my wife was going to the seminary at the time. So the guys that were leading these guys from the mission were actually guys in the seminary working towards pastoralship.
Really?
So it gave them the opportunity to, you know, either try to disciple or, you know, share Christ with these guys while they were working and try to lead them in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Some discipleship. And so these people, homeless ministry, helping them get paired. And I thought you said they also helped them also start a business too?
Well, the model that we had tried to create was if the guys could, one, finish the program, the recovery program they were at, and they had some things they had to do with either the grass cutting business, which is where most of it was modeled from. We would have the guys take them out. They would teach them how to, you know, use a big mower,
right.
You know, use a weed eater, use a blower, how to cut grass correctly. And if they could stay with us for a full year and stay on a team for a full year, then they could keep the mower that they had a trimmer that they had and a blower that they had. Mm-hmm. And then Kim would actually spend some time with them showing them how she would bid properties. Mm. And she would show them how she did, you know, the paperwork, how she kept track of expenses and so forth. So the goal was to set these guys up to successfully start their own business, mm-hmm. if that was something that they were interested in.
Yeah. So, I find small businesses really interesting. I think it's really cool when anyone starts their own business. And it takes a lot of stuff to run that. You have to manage a whole lot of things, like you said, from payroll to bidding, all those stuff. And so that's cool, helping other people do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you and your wife did this until COVID happened.
And we tried to work through COVID.
And worked through COVID.
We had... And really the end of it was the last year that we had the business, I was already driving a truck. Okay. At that point. We didn't have very many employees. The business was still making decent money, but we had some guys that were cutting grass, and then we had some guys that were doing, we were doing smaller projects, mm-hmm. and so forth. And I decided to go to truck driving school. I went to truck driving school, and I was working for I worked for another trucking company,
yeah.
first, CR England.
Yep, CR England.
Yep. And my wife really seemed to be taking a toll on her. So I really started trying to talk her into thinking about letting the business go. Mm-hmm. And then we were down to three guys, and then in one night, two of the guys overdosed. They had finished the recovery program. The three of them had gotten an apartment complex together, and they both decided to use drugs again.
Yeah.
One of the guys died. The other guy ended up in kidney failure, was on dialysis for a long time. And we actually worked with him and tried to get him, you know, back. We're still in touch with him. He's actually sober now. Mm. But at that point, we had just we kind of made a decision that at the end of that year, we would shut the business down. Mm. So we started getting our contracts together, and I knew another guy in the business, and he bought some of our contracts and our equipment and so forth, and we just closed the business down.
Gotcha.
And that helped my wife, you know, kind of focus on school as well. So
Yeah, and I want to correct something I said too. I said you transition the business because of COVID. No, the business was doing fine, but with the employees, and it was hard to come by.
Right. We were considered an essential business, so we were allowed to continue working. However, it just became really difficult to hire and to get people to come to work.
So. Yeah, and that's a really tough thing to go through too.
Yeah.
The death of one of your employees, and mm-hmm. yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then, so you were in the truck. Your wife was going to seminary.
Right.
Which seminary?
Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville.
Yeah, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Great. Yeah, it's a good school.
Yeah.
What is she going for?
She just finished her last class. She graduates on May 9th with her master's. Biblical counseling mm-hmm. is what she went to school for.
Yeah.
But she ended up with an MDiv.
Okay.
And so an MDiv, there's not actually in biblical counseling, but she wanted to do the MDiv because she wanted the extra language courses.
Gotcha.
And so basically she went to school to become a biblical counselor. And then she just took her test and did her interview to go into the PhD program, wow. which will be a PhD in biblical counseling.
Yeah.
So I think her MDiv is in theological studies or something.
Yeah, that's a really comprehensive degree, the MDiv. You do a lot of different things, not just counseling, but
yeah.
language. You even got the
Hebrew
tattoo. So, yeah, it's cool. Did you pick up any Hebrew that she was learning?
You.
Not your style.
Yeah.
She can translate for you.
Is somewhat, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's cool.
No, it is awesome that, you know, she does have the resources to answer questions. Like if I'm reading something and I want to know what the original word was,
yeah.
you know, that was used in the Bible or something, she can find that out pretty quickly for me and give me the different meanings for it. And, you know, the different ways to read it.
So. Yeah. Tap into that resource. You know, she's always, she's probably knows a lot. I mean, done a lot of
studies. She loves to share information.
So, good. You like to get information, right?
I do love to get information.
It's a perfect, perfect combo. So during this time, you guys moved out to the country?
We did. Actually, it's been about a year and a half ago. We moved from the Highlands in Louisville, which is about as inner busy city as you can possibly get, out to Trimble County, Kentucky, out in Bedford, with a little bit of property and some sheep.
We have sheep.
Yeah, we have our dog. I can't forget to mention my dog, or she'll get her feelings hurt.
Yeah,
but you know, we just started into the sheep thing. Our ultimate dream is to retire with just kind of a hodgepodge of animals.
Yeah, a little hobby farm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or maybe even bigger than a hobby farm.
Well, the sheep we have right now are hare sheep, except for one. We have, I told you about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Those are the four hare sheep.
I was waiting to hear it. I love that.
And then we have Jack-Jack, which we also call Judas sometimes. He's a big boy, and he's not a hare sheep, so he does get the big furry coat. But my wife, she, you know, knits and spins yarn and dyes yarn and does all that stuff. So, you know, she will use the sheep for some of that stuff. But
So a lot of clothing and things like that.
She does a lot of sweaters and gloves and hats and stuffed animals. And
I love that you guys have sheep named Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Jack-Jack.
And Jack-Jack,
And what's the dog's name?
Bonnie.
Okay, shout out to Bonnie. Don't get jealous.
Yeah.
You know, the sheep get the limelight, but you're important too.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a really fun thing to do, and I can just see that being in the country, just kind of a new pace of life.
Yeah, we love it where we are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me your story on how you got to Nussbaum. How'd you hear about Nussbaum? You're at CR England.
Yeah, I was at CR England, and I was running Dollar General accounts. And, you know, most truck drivers know how tough that job is. You spend more time pushing rolltainers, really heavy rolltainers off the truck and trying to find a spot in the store for them. And as I was telling you on the phone, I'd met one of the guys. I can't ever remember his name, but he was on the GE account. Now he does flatbeds for us. But he plays a lot of bluegrass guitar as well.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about Nussbaum and what a great, faithful company it was. And, you know, told me that I should come there. And, you know, I probably wasn't in a place where I could just leave CR England at the time. So, I kind of put that in the back of my brain. And then I'd had it with CR England. I was ready to pretty much walk out and leave. And I'd called my wife one day and asked her if she could remember the name of the company.
What's that one company?
That I was telling her about. I talked to the guy that I wanted to check out. And neither one of us could remember it. And lo and behold, I was in Scottsville on 31. I think it's west there. It's either 31 south or 31 west. And lo and behold, there's a Nussbaum truck in front of me with a recruiting phone number written on the back of it. It's like, holy cow.
So, right.
So I called that phone number, and it was 5 days later. They called me and offered me a job. So I didn't start right away. I stayed with CR England for maybe another month, but my wife and I had planned a vacation to Scotland that we were supposed to take when COVID hit, but we couldn't go because of COVID. And so I left CR England. We went to Scotland for about 2.5 weeks. And then the weekend after I came back from Scotland, I started with Nussbaum.
Okay. It's so cool. I just imagine that you're on the phone like, what's the name of that company? I can't remember. And then the truck just merges right in front of
it
you.
It was there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And the Scotland trip inspired you guys to get sheep?
maybe, maybe not. Yeah. Absolutely awesome vacation.
Okay.
Great place to visit. But my wife's always loved cheap and, you know, different fiber and, you know, stuff that she could knit and so forth.
Yeah,
so,
and you guys like animals too.
We love animals,
yeah. As a family.
Yep.
Okay. Sweet. Yeah. Did you do any gardening or stuff like
she
that?
She does. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Not a green thumb.
Not a green thumb. Nope.
You got a thumb for the guitar, though. It
depends on who you ask.
Who you ask. Well, sometimes I'll have to get you in here. And do you play electric or acoustic?
Both. Less on the electric side.
Yeah.
Especially since I left the band.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just hadn't been a whole lot of use for an electric guitar. So play a lot of acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. So we pretty much talked about the main stuff I wanted to talk about. I think if we could summarize your story, like thinking about just your life, are there any themes that come to mind to you?
You know, I think like all of us, our life ultimately points to Christ, you know. My whole life I tried to run from him and, you know, could never find my place. So I bounced around from job to job, place to place, house to house. And, you know, you just can't fill a God-sized hole with human decisions, you know. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Kind of a Jonah story almost.
Yeah. I think it's everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
I do.
So true. And part of that, like looking to different jobs at the time, like this was not, it was going well for a time and not going well. And then realizing that not even a job can satisfy that God-shaped hole too.
Right.
Like Nussbaum's great, but it's not going to be the thing that's going to make you happy at the end of the day.
No,
yeah.
But I think being here too is part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, actually working with a faith-based business and working with other believers, you know, there's that that level of comfort that you have and confidence in the people that you're working with and the people that you work for. And you have confidence in the decisions that are being made for you sometimes. And it just makes it a whole lot easier.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode, I have a little game to play, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Okay. They're called hot takes. So I'll share something that'll be a controversial statement. You can either agree with it or disagree with it, and you can tell me why. So does that make sense?
Okay.
I'll just say a statement, and you can agree or disagree.
Okay.
All right? You must be able to parallel park with a semi. Do you agree?
Or disagree.
Disagree. Yeah. When do you do that? I mean, does that ever happen?
There are times where it would come in handy, but I don't know that it's ever been a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did they test you that when you?
They did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always think about that. It's like, is that something that's necessary? Or
some states do parallel parking. Others do an alley dock. So.
Okay. Interesting. Love's is the best gas station.
Disagree.
Disagree. Yeah. What's the best?
I'm a fan of Pilot.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. What makes Pilot better than
their windshield washer fluid is actually windshield washer fluid.
No way.
Yeah.
What does Love's use?
Greasy water is the best I can come up with.
Yeah. Cool. Some people really like Bucky's too. I don't know if you ever get a chance to go there.
I don't know that they have truck stops, though. I don't think you can take a truck into most Buc-ee's.
You're right. You know what?
I think there's one in Texas, somebody said, that has truck parking, but the rest of them?
Just regular cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought about that before. Huh. Yeah. So Pilot, it's where it's at.
Pilot is where it's at.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I like the one here down the street because they got Bojangles. I don't know if I like the Love's
That's
part.
That's Love's. Yeah.
Yeah. The Bojangles, though. It's nice. All right. Acoustic guitars are underrated. Do you agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Yeah.
Or no, I agree.
You agree with that?
Hold on. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. They're underrated.
So you think people should play acoustic guitars more?
Yes.
You agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, don't see the limelight that much.
Maybe I'm indifferent. I mean,
because you like them
both.
It
depends on which kind of music you're playing, you know, and what you're trying to accomplish. So,
Daniel, you got thoughts on that?
I think that acoustic guitars are properly rated.
Properly rated. Not more, not less. So you guys.
I mean, I'm more of an acoustic fan myself, just because I'm not very good at the electric.
Yeah.
That's a little biased.
Yeah.
Depends. Acoustic guitar is much more versatile.
Okay. Yeah, you can use it in a lot of situations.
Yeah, you can't take an electric guitar to a campfire. Well, you can, but it's a big
It's not going
to
sound good. Only got a select few songs.
Right.
Like AC/DC and other stuff. So, socks and sandals are a good fashion choice.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
My wife would say no.
You rock it, though.
I do.
You rock the sock and sandal.
Do the socks and sandals sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Just helps me figure out you more better as that, too. So, yeah, that's great. Hot takes for the day. So, socks and sandals are back in, apparently. Crocs? Croc fan?
No,
on the Crocs.
No Crocs, yeah.
Okay, cool. That's good. Crocs are a dicey choice.
Yeah.
Depending where you are. If you're walking through water or something.
Yeah. I have a friend that we always make fun of because he wears Crocs everywhere he goes. Yeah.
Big Croc guy.
Crocs and a wife beater.
It's quite the look.
Yes, it is.
Cool. Well, thanks again for being here. Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And thank you to everyone that is listening, tuning in today. And until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi everyone, this is CJ from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit nussbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released.